Welcome, everybody, to episode 361 of WordPress Weekly for Wednesday, July 24th, 2019. I'm your host, Jeff Chandler, joined by John James Jacoby, who just so happens to be, if you're watching on the live video stream, he is now in a dungeon, and he can change the lights of his dungeon on a whim, thanks to his smart home.
Oh, boy.
And I do air quotes when I say smart home.
Yeah, the listeners can't see your air quotes. They still can't.
Well, I hope hopefully the pronunciation helps. No, I'm doing okay. It's thank God we're through that heat wave of last week. Yesterday it was 75 degrees and I had to wear a coat outside. So I don't know. I'd rather be doing that than sweating doing nothing. But doing pretty good.
It finally stopped raining here, so our sump pump has now stopped going off continuously and goes off like every 30 minutes, so that's good.
That's nice.
You got a haircut. No, the viewers or the listeners can't see that.
Well, I took a shower, so it's nice and.
Oh, thanks for freshening up for the show.
Yeah,
the listeners will appreciate that. No problem.
No problem. I mean, I work remotely, and I got to still stay fresh for whatever reason. I guess for my own sanity. today we got a great guest lined up. We're going to talk a little bit about something called the Indie Web, which is becoming more and more of a hot topic. As the days and years go on. And our guest is David Chansky, and his day job is actually training for an airline, but he also develops indie web WordPress plugins so that others can take control of their online identity. Thanks a lot, David, for joining us on the show today.
Someone's been reading my bio.
Well, I mean, it makes it a lot easier on me, the host of the show, when I could just copy and paste the bio, and it's a lot more accurate that way, too.
I always feel like I should write a better one, though, but
yeah.
Either way, thank you for accepting my
offer. I appreciate that the subtitle on your blog is The Definitive Location. Like, it makes it very clear.
I actually created the blog because I was tired of being lower than the top of my own search results, so I figured...
Good thinking.
I got tired of things that I did 10 years ago being at the top. Especially when none of them were embarrassing. They were just, okay, if this is all people know about me, then clearly I need to do something about it. And that was long before I got involved in any web, but I had a website for years that I didn't maintain very much. And then a few years ago, I happened to be listening to a podcast. They were talking about an event that had just happened, which would have been Indie Web Camp, which is the actual physical event that people who are interested in the Indie Web come to. And it sounded interesting. And by coincidence, there was an event happening in New York City where I happen to live. So I showed up and I just keep showing up. That's how you get involved in the community. Well, that's how you get involved in the community. You keep showing up. So I've participated in organizing an event. At least a few of them, and a few times I've just been there, so they've drafted me as a secondary organizer because they need another set of hands, and I'd done it before, so showing up seems to help.
Yeah, I mean, that's why meetups are so integral to the success of WordPress and getting more people involved in the open source process. It usually starts at the grassroots level, and the grassroots level is typically meetups.
And in the indie web community, I'm known as the WordPress guy because we have a lot of, well, indie web is not just WordPress. You have people who are on their own custom made systems, people who are on Drupal, people who are on whatever system you can think of. So I am involved in a lot of the WordPress plugins that enable some of the indie web concepts. So
I also So speaking of the indie web, let's talk a little bit about that. First, describe what is the indie web and how does it differ from the web that most of us use today?
Well, if you go back, it was what the web was like before everybody started
putting the good old times.
I'm not even going to go there too much. I'm just going to say before everybody started putting their content on other people's websites, they thought it was cool to have their own. So the first principle of it is let's go back to when your content lived where you put it instead of where another organization wants you to put it. So whatever you can say about Facebook, Twitter, what have you, they want you to put content on their site, and then one day they may shut down or they may change how that content works. So the idea of the indie web is the content is yours. If you can also, the community is not against people being on Facebook. least, again, not as a community. I'm sure there are individuals who would say, why would you want to be there? But the philosophy of the community is we want to be where the conversation is, but that conversation emanates from your website. So if you won't go and look at any website of a web community member, they will post on their site that will automatically go out to Twitter. There are services that are available that would allow you to pull back any replies. So if you replied to a post on my website that also had a Twitter version, and there's a link to the Twitter version on most of my posts, then it would automatically generate a comment on my site with that exact text. So the whole conversation lives on my site.
Like a Twitter trackback or something.
It's a web mention, which is if you go through history, okay. Trackbacks turned into pingbacks. Pingbacks didn't quite take off, and web mentions would be the next iteration of that that tries to solve some of the more technical problems. But the principle is the same. There's a link. It automatically goes out to a site when somebody sends you notice that they've linked to you, verifies that link, and then displays it on your site. Except pingbacks always displayed as something pretty uninteresting. The advantage of web mentions is they'll parse the page and try to turn it into a comment. And you can mark up your site so that it knows what is your actual text, where is the picture of you to pull in, where is your name. And that's traditionally being done with micro formats, which have been around for a while, but that's just the recommended markup. So micro formats are a bunch of classes you can put onto a file in order to allow a parser to read it. So it can read it, find everything it needs, and display. If you look at my site, not many people reply to me, but there are a bunch of other sites that get a lot more interactivity where you'll see, 50 little faces that have been pulled in from not just Twitter, what have you. Facebook shut down their API, so no more input from there. But even on somebody else's website. So if you have a website that has this enabled, and with WordPress, it's a couple plugins, you can write a post, link to my post, and then when you send me that web mention, my site will go out, read your site, find your picture, find your comment, and display it. It still goes through the regular moderation process. And there are people who've turned off the comment form and just use that.
Nice. Yeah, I remember trackbacks and pingbacks ended up just becoming a new way of spamming people. And most of the time, they'd end up just getting deleted. Although back in the day when I first started using WordPress, and I say that like 2006, 2007, some of the trackbacks I saw were, it's pretty neat that you could see that somebody had mentioned the article on your site. You could see a little blurb on what they were saying about your article, and then you can go see what they read, and you can comment on their site, and it created this sort of distributed community, and that has long since gone away. Now the trackbacks and pingbacks pretty much are all but useless now. I'm hopeful to see web mentions become a standard if it's not already, and have that built into WordPress. Okay.
It's a W3C recommendation. So pingbacks and trackbacks were never a standard recommended by anybody, but the W3C did actually add web mentions.
That's good. Hopefully WordPress builds in support for those soon, even though there are plugins out there apparently that add that support, and Sarah's wrote about that. I think we even have a guest post about it on the Tabber.
Yeah, I am a contributor to the Web Mentions plugin there, and it is still very active, so we are maintaining it and doing bug fixes and as needed, whereas some of the other things that have come over the years, whatever you can say about pingbacks and trackbacks, there isn't a lot of interest right now. So they've sort of, the reason why everybody's saying that used to be good and now it's turned into this garbage pile is because there hasn't been that effort to try to address the issue. It's just sort of, this feature is finished.
No, your blog does a really good job of splitting all of the different types of activity or the type of mentions apart. It feels like a good example of, I see you probably have a taxonomy for kinds of posts with notes, articles, photos, likes, replies, bookmarks, and check-ins. Your own definitive location, david.shansky.com, is actually like a pretty sweet example of how this could be set up in to really intercommunicate with other people's blogs in a deeper way than just pingbacks or forcing folks to log in or to be a guest on your own site and go through the process of adding their own email and entering everything into the comment form. This is it's a really good example of how smoothly that it can be done on your own site, integrating all those things.
That's actually the next IndieWeb principle, which is don't just talk about protocols. Talk about what you're going to build for yourself, not what you're going to build for other people. I'm always happy to build for other people, but the stuff I build is because I enjoy building it. My day job is not anything to do with programming. I don't have a computer science degree. My degree was in library science, so tangentially related, but not quite the same. So I do this because I enjoy building these tools and using them.
Now, is the open web and the indie web the same thing?
Not exactly. The indie web is a specific set of philosophies. The open web would be a bit broader.
Okay.
So the open web is talking about that idea of things not being controlled by corporations, whereas the indie web is talking about a specific set of philosophies about personal website ownership.
Okay, so, that's a key difference. Thanks for pointing that out.
Yeah, so anybody, and you could always look on indieweb.org. I sort of recommend it because it is a rabbit hole where the website's set up as a wiki. So there are hundreds of pages of people talking about all sorts of concepts, not just the protocol level stuff, which again is only of interest to people of more technical nature, but the philosophical stuff. So right there on the front page are a list of principles. We elaborate on them in several places about where our focus is. So our focus tends to go towards not just the technical stuff, although you get that because a lot of programmers in the community, but the other part of it, which is we're happy if you show up at one of our events, again, indie web camps, and just build a website in 5 minutes or spend the day working on that. So we just want people to have their content where they are, and we'll teach them how to add some of these tools that other people have built or to work on things themselves in order to add that. But we're just happy if you have a website and use it. That's for you. That's a pretty simple goal.
So out of the box, WordPress, you know, how would you rank it in terms of some of the indie web philosophies and principles? How many of those do you think are sort of integrated into the core of WordPress, would you say?
Well, from the beginning, because it is, you know, at its heart, still a blogging platform. It's expanded to do all sorts of other things, but that's where the whole community started. It has a lot of tools that would just be considered indie web features out of the box. So you get a website, you get an interactivity system and comments, although it has its pros and cons. You have the ability to create posts and date stamped content. You have the ability to search your website for information. You have pages full of feeds. So it does a lot of that out of the box.
And you would end up owning your own content because it's WordPress open source software. You just put it on a host, and now you are in control of your own domain.
And if you don't like
almost.
It, you know, like any WordPress site, if you don't like where it's hosted, you back up your content, you go down the road to another hosting provider, you put it on there. So if one company doesn't please you, you can move it around. And from the perspective of somebody who's visiting your site, they don't have to know you moved it. I've definitely changed hosts over the years and nobody noticed that my site moved. There may have been downtime for a few minutes, but there may have been a few days where I didn't post anything because I was waiting for everybody to migrate over. But my URL, I've paid for Shansky.com for over a decade now.
I think the most interesting indie website for folks that are listening that maybe haven't either aren't familiar with it, haven't heard of it, or want to learn more is just indieweb.org/y. It really lists off all of the core kind of fundamental values of why to have your own website, freedom of just whatever it is that you want to do with it, to host it where you want, publish what you want. But then, I mean, it's a topic that I think is kind of on the back of everybody's minds, things like censorship or unreliability, content loss, content theft, like one of the nice things about using WordPress or Drupal or any other thing to host your own website and have it be yours is that you you get to decide. I mean, Paul Gibbs's whole philosophy with BuddyPress development was always to bring your own terms of service. So IndieWeb's philosophies really are kind of nicely aligned with a lot of the like WordPress project philosophies also.
And if you have a question, we have an active chat room. And not, because we believe in making sure that no matter where you want to talk to somebody in the indie web, the same as no matter how you want to communicate with your website, that chat room is on Freenode IRC, but it's also bridged to Slack. It's also, I believe, bridged to Matrix and Discord. And there's a web interface. So we have a WordPress room, we have a dev room, we have a general room, and we have an informal off-topic chat room. So anybody who wants to show up can just chat with us, and people always, assuming they're available, jump to help. And I know that I have a log. Anytime somebody asks a question, I may not immediately respond, but when I get back to my computer or I have a moment on my phone, I'll start trying to help them.
No, it gets people, any questions. No, it gets people motivated into the indie web is when they get a notice saying that all of their content is at risk of disappearing into the ethos because either the silo is shutting down or guess what? Your content is now violating a terms of service, even though it's been fine for the past 3 years.
Well, we actually have a page for it. as I said, it's a wiki. We have a page for site deaths. So we have a list of all the things that have died
while the community has been around. Oh, man. I bet you that graveyard list is depressing to see.
Yeah, everything from Google Reader up to MySpace lost a bunch of stuff recently. You have a bunch of networks. So there, you know, you go back and you see this is where people built their entire identity on the internet.
Freaking
and then,
GeoCities.
Yeah, one day. Yeah, I did not back up my GeoCities site. I'm still regretting it. It would have been interesting to see what it looked like. I only have it in my mind.
Just by chance. Well, actually, I know that there's been, was it GeoCities or someone else? Somebody was like trying to back up or get a hold of all the GeoSites data and put it up on webarchive.org or like a specific archive. I don't know if they've been successful in doing that.
I remember reading about it, but I don't know what the result was. I know there's somebody who was trying to create a NeoCities, which was like an version of GeoCities.
Oh man! So there's a plugin that you author or at least contribute to called IndieWeb. It's by IndieWebCamp WordPress Outreach Club, and tell us a little bit about this because it seems to me like on the surface that I don't want to. It's not. It's similar. It seems similar to me to Jetpack in the way that it is about IndieWeb, and each one of the little modules could be bits and pieces of IndieWeb functionality.
Well, you just actually identified why it was created.
Okay.
It is not actually, it is actually a plugin installer. So the extensions on there will install plugins from the WordPress repository, but the plugin by itself does some things with identity. So it allows you to specify that your website represents a single person instead of multiple users, a few minor features that WordPress wouldn't have on that. So it allows you to say this URL, that is my website, david.chansky.com or what have you, has one author, and then display information of that author indicating that that URL is also me. So there's a bunch of markup that goes on in the background, and then it lets you install the other popular indie web plugins. So we have some pretty vague criteria about what constitutes an indie web plugin. If anybody came to us and said, could you add this as a recommendation? If it met the criteria of supporting the community goals, we probably would. So in there, you would have, the WebMention plugin. There's a plugin called Semantic Linkbacks, which takes the WebMention and tries to display it better. There's PostKinds, which, again, tries to turn your posts into these various popular types from sites you would have seen, likes, replies, what have you. And that one's sort of a takeoff of the old post format system.
Mm-hmm.
So post formats did not take off, but
they're still there.
Yeah. So this is a drop-in replacement that allows you to use the same concept except with indie web types of posts.
Hmm.
So the only reason it's called kinds is I needed a word that wasn't being used and types was used, formats was used. So then there are a few others in there. Syndication links, which if you do post the same content to another site, just creates a little icon. It also has some basic syndication support, but its job is to make it so that when you have one of these posts that's also on Twitter, that there's a little link to the tweet so that people can click through. And remember, as a community, we don't care where you actually post things as long as you're interacting with us. We'd prefer it's on your website, but we can talk to anybody anywhere. And as long as there's an API for it, somebody will build a connection.
No, you look at sites like Twitter and Facebook, and you just register an account and then you start posting, you start following some people. How much work is it to put together a website using IndieWeb philosophies and plugins to allow everything to be yours? And, you know, what type of upkeep are we talking about here?
Okay. Well, we had the IndieWeb Summit at the end of June, and I was in a room for 45 minutes, and it took me just to go over how you would take a bare site and enable all these tools and set them up. It took me about 25 minutes. Now I know where everything is because I was involved with most of these things. But after 25 minutes, you'd have a site where you could go and post content. And since we have a posting interface that will work for any type of website called MicroPub, which was developed by the IndieWeb community, also a W3C standard that allows you to use a variety of different clients that can be specialized to post likes or what have you. We have, this year we've started working on readers. So we're trying to replicate the functionality of things like a Facebook feed or a Google reader in a stream where you can click a button and reply to something directly from the article that you're reading. So we're trying to create that experience that people like on these other sites with your site, and most of the tools could just activate all the plugins, maybe do a little theme work or find a theme that already supports all this stuff, and then you're done. And after that, it's just, okay, I have a thought. I'm going to post what Matt would probably call an aside, going back to post formats, but we would call a note. I want to reply to something. I'm just going to read it in this IndieWeb reader and click a button, and it will automatically send a reply to my website, post it there, send a note out over web mention. So all these protocols are designed to work together. And I've spent, for my own website, I've spent 4 years on and off trying to make it so that I can pick up my phone, open up an application on Android or iOS, because there are ones on both, post something, have it go to my site, have that automatically continue on its way to Twitter, have the replies automatically come back to my site. And parts of that have worked from the beginning, but everything I've done has just made it easier and easier to get to the point that I just have to write and post, because if I think about writing something, I will probably say it's not worth the bother and talk myself out of it. And I'm this close to getting it. I do a lot of bookmarking online using Pinboard. I'm trying to get to the point where I could switch that over to my website. I just haven't gotten it the way I want it.
It is the nicest thing to be able to post your content on your own website and know that you it is yours, and you can, you know, unlike on Twitter, you can edit it if you find a typo or if there are replies to it, you can moderate those replies in a way that is appropriate for how you not only use your own website, but for how you want other visitors to your own website to view the content that's in it, as unopposed to, you know, the replies to things that you might say or do on Twitter. No matter how much you block a person or you mute a person, they're going to reply to you, and other people are going to see those people's replies unless they've also blocked and muted them. So by having all of this stuff live within your own WordPress site, for example, and having comments and things like that live on your website under moderation controls that are yours to decide, it just kind of seems like the right way for all of these tools really to work on your own website, especially indie auth. Like, auth is one of those things that, like, even with a REST API in WordPress, there is no OAuth in WordPress core. It still is a plugin or a thing you have to add. Which makes things like IndieWeb really, really...
OAuth 2, which is the standard that the API team has been wanting to put in. Mm-hmm. IndieAuth is an extension off of that that doesn't really require a third-party server because it uses your URL as your identity.
Exactly.
So, so the IndieAuth plugin for WordPress works. Our biggest problem is hosting provider configuration issues.
Mm-hmm.
But if you installed it right now, if you configured everything, you would be able to log into your website using that, and it would just work. There are enough tools to support it. I was surprised to see the same IndieAuth protocol is being used in a bunch of different places that you wouldn't expect. Home Assistant, which is a home automation system, implemented IndieAuth for their
That's cool. That makes sense for home assistant, though. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, they wanted something that was simple that didn't really require you to register your OAuth provider. So this allows you to make everything public because your identity is verified by it being your actual website.
Exactly.
So that's how you prove who you are.
WordPress.com a long time ago implemented OpenID. And I'm assuming it's still there because I feel like you have to support that kind of in perpetuity in order for OpenID to be open and reliable. But that was one of those things where you would think that having an entity like WordPress.com kind of double down and go in on OpenID would have really helped catapult the concept of using a website. I mean, I get it. It's still a hub, right? It is still someone else's data, but at least having someone use it for millions of accounts would have really helped conceptually the idea of people really liking and talking about and wanting OpenID or IndieAuth. But IndieAuth needs more attention. It needs more numbers because the idea of using your own personal website to identify your identity is the single source of truth, the definitive version of you. Is really a huge need.
You've actually identified the whole idea of it very simply. It's your website is you. And yep. Anytime you want to authenticate to anybody, you use your website. And if you want to delegate that authentication to another service, all you do is you put a link on your website that says, this is also me. Mm-hmm. So the community calls that a rel me link, which is rel equals me in any HTML. And that says, this is also me.
Mm-hmm.
So any service that finds that could follow it anywhere and log in as anything. You could say that your Twitter account is also you and log into Twitter and delegate your access to that. So you could work. There are a bunch of people who delegate to GitHub. So they put a link to GitHub mm-hmm. on their site. The system automatically finds the link, goes over to GitHub and says, if you can log into GitHub, that means it's the same person as your website.
And that was one of the big problems that Automattic had with WordPress.com is that, like, you know, 99.9% of all .com users had one .com website, and it may or may not have actually represented themselves. Most of them were personal bloggers, but some of them are businesses, some more VIP sites. And then most of Automattic's employees working on WordPress.com belonged to hundreds of sites internally. Where, like, on a big hosted blogging service like that, you have no real guarantee that, like, your website is you. So the idea of being able to, hand them off or broker them or somehow identify relationships between websites is really handy in that way. Because you can link to a million different websites that aren't you on purpose. But in order to have the system understand that another website also is sort of trusted, it seems pretty handy.
And it all dates back to stuff that's been around for years. Those links mm-hmm. were very early in WordPress. You used to be able to put in a rel link as part of XFN, if you remember that whole idea.
Yeah.
So you could not only rel me, which is still actively used for that, but rel friend, rel acquaintance, rel daughter, and I haven't seen anybody use those in a while, but it was the same idea where you could tell a system what the relationship of this link was to your website. And all that
stuff. And all the XFN code is still in WordPress. It's just all tucked away and hidden and not pulled out.
But it's still it's simple and it still works really well. So you mm-hmm. if you're asking, can somebody who doesn't know very much about programming, who knows a little basic HTML, do something like that, add a class or add a rel to a link to make sure that you've established a relationship, most people who are designers can figure that one out without having a large amount of development skills. And
right.
we want it to be that easy. We don't even require that level. There's even a service that people could buy into if they want an indie website, micro.blog, which is pretty popular lately.
Remember back in the day of seeing XFN in WordPress, like in the back end where you could define relationships, which stands for XHTML Friends Network. And I said, what the hell is this? I don't know what this is. And I never used it, and I haven't really seen anyone bring it up over the years, except sometimes Matt himself has talked about how WordPress has XFN built in, and he talks about how it's so cool you can create these different types of relationships, but I have not really seen or read any practical use of this.
Well, remember, Matt was involved with a lot of these concepts, not when they were the indie web, but a lot of the things that were adopted as part of these philosophies because they were there and they worked. And unlike some of the more, let's say, newer plumbing that's come into play, having a JSON API, for example, is, you have to really know a lot to do that. Adding a class is a really easy way to represent information that most people with a minimum of understanding can do. So it's a much more universal way of communicating. The running joke is HTML is my API. It's one of the t-shirt slogans. So we have an API that the community, that everybody reads. We don't need to go teach a system how to do new things. Admittedly, that helps in some areas, but in this, it's read the website, read what it says, make sure that a parser can read it very easily, and you'll be able to share information.
So let's say I admittedly have 50,000 tweets that I've put into the Twitter silo. Most of those are things I've written. Sometimes they're just links from the personal blog or from other places. But let's say someone said, that's it, I've had it. I want all of this stuff I've given to Facebook and Twitter on my own site, and it's going to be on my own site and my own domain from now on. What sort of tools do you know of that exist where you could transfer content from the silos onto your own site and then just sort of be in control of everything from there on out?
Well, there aren't any indie web tools for WordPress that actually import from, let's say, Twitter, but that's because there are plenty of WordPress plugins already that do that.
Okay.
So since there's a lot of them, there's Keyring Social Importer, I believe, that does that, which is pretty popular, and a few others. We didn't feel the need to write one ourselves, but if anybody wanted one, then again, we would. We have ones that do it in real time. For example, there's an application called Own Your Swarm, since a lot of people still use Swarm, which will log into your Swarm account, and when you check in on Swarm, will send it to your website. So since you can't do it the other way, you can't publish to Swarm, it does the whole relationship in reverse. There's another one, Own Your Gram, where every time you post to Instagram, it will take that back to your website in real time. And it does that over MicroPub, because as long as your website understands how to receive MicroPub posts, it'll just work. And WordPress now has a plugin for MicroPub.
You know, just sort of looking at the indie web and owning your own data and sites, it seems a little bit to me like a pendulum, where back in 2006, 2007, it was, you know, the Web 2.0 craze. It was all about all these little services you could connect to, have your own website, have your own island, someplace that's yours. It's your personal brand. It's you. Make everything connect back to that one website. And then over the years, it seems like a lot of people have progressed to, you know, the Facebooks and the Twitters and the social networks that have staying power. And now they're all ingrained into those silos. But the pendulum, from what I've noticed, is starting to swing back in the other direction, with a lot of people out there saying, look, you got to have your own website. This is why I have one, why it's important for you to have one. And there's a lot more mentions and sort of inspiration out there for people to go back to having their own place online that they own and control. And it's I think that's a great trend, that it's swinging back.
It doesn't mean you have to cut yourself off from those other communities. It means you integrate those communities into your website.
Well, that is exactly the problem that I think folks that are curious about having their own website immediately identify is, like, it's a pretty lonely place. Like, it is really just you with all of your thoughts or whatever you want to post. It's kind of intimidating, and then people just don't do anything with it. So that's always been, I mean, for my years of working with WordPress, is like, how do you motivate someone to just write on their own website for like years at a time, not knowing, I mean, just talking into the abyss, right? Like, that's all of the indie web tools really try to address that problem head on, to start bringing content back into it, the feedback, having some kind of feedback.
And still having the same experience that people have come to like. Right. Nobody's going to say that Facebook didn't create an experience that people wanted. that Twitter didn't create it. You know, admittedly, every time somebody creates an experience we like, they change it and then we don't like it anymore. But those features that you liked, people like having a stream of all their content and the ability to have a little button that they can click to respond. We built that. That's another one of the community things that we were working on starting last year through this year. There is now, it's pending approval in the WordPress.org repository, but it can be downloaded from GitHub. There is a micro sub reader, which is our answer to that stream. It's a social and indie web version of a more traditional RSS reader that incorporates all those types of elements. If you don't want to wait for that, you can go and install Aperture, which is also already in the WordPress repository, that does the same thing, except it uses a hosted service instead of having it done through your website. And the hosted service is available for free for a certain number of days worth of storage. So you can try right now.
Jeff mentions the pendulum, and this happens a lot with things. It happens with social networks. It happens with software. You want to have a monolithic repo and everything all live in one place, and then you want to break it apart and have everything be small and little and atomic and work on all the small little pieces independently. And so people have a lonely blog, and then they go somewhere, Twitter, Instagram, and then they publish for a while. They get sick of it. They get over-socialized. They don't want to put their stuff there anymore. They get burned by it, or somehow they lose their content or what have you, and then they want to go back the other way or give it up completely, right? So to have there be a set of tools that allow or empower website owners to kind of have the best of both is really, really important. I mean, like, otherwise they'll lose their ability to, they really won't have the freedoms that WordPress really thinks is important, and that the indie web thinks are important also. Like, you just give them up, which is the saddest thing to do with your freedom, to just relinquish it to nobody. So it's pretty neat. Like, I haven't really had the time to play with any of the indie web tools in a really long time. Like, the indie web commenting, and even, like, I think open web comments I maybe had played with a long time ago before too, but, like, it just seems so much better, like a more natural kind of feeling. Yeah.
Comments are always comments on the software, but as well in general are always appreciated. All of the development is done publicly, so we're happy if anybody finds something that they want us to fix. And for you specifically, since I know you're capable of it, pull requests are always welcome also. So if you're really unhappy and you don't want to wait for somebody to do it for you, you're always welcome to do it yourself.
And yeah, it is github.com/indieweb. There's a whole bunch of repos. I see 50 of them.
Yeah, not all of them are the word. Not all of them are the WordPress ones. The WordPress ones are all WordPress dash. You can also go, the ones that are maintained by me are under my repo, which is Dushansky. So you can find anything there. They're all linked in our, we have a list of all of the plugins and where you can find them, but we're always happy to get any sort of feedback.
It's pretty great.
My obsessive compulsiveness is that I've been known to stop whatever else I'm doing if there is really a big problem that somebody's experiencing.
I don't think that that's obsessive compulsive at all. I think that is just being a responsible adult.
Well, for me, it just will eat at me. That I have broken somebody's website.
Well, yeah, right. I mean, I think that's the right thing to do.
Yeah, even though I didn't really, I built it not just for them, I built it for myself, and it's working for me.
I get it.
I built an indie web plugin purely for the purpose of being able to post on my site as I posted things what the weather was at that time.
I saw that too on your website, that you've got the weather history with all of the posts and stuff that come in. I thought that was pretty clever.
Well, not only that, weather APIs kept shutting me out, so there are now 7 of them built into that plugin, so if one fails, I can switch to the other one.
There you go.
Nice. I'm going to link this in the show notes too, but there's a great post written by Jamie Tanna about 2 days ago, and she says, why I have a website and you should too, and she goes over a list of great reasons on why it's important to have your own website. She talks about monetization and emails, place to find your personal brands, and perhaps one of my favorite reasons that she brings up is just to have a place to write, just to express yourself and for expression and a place to scream into the void. And that's something I've really missed personally. And you know, I, you know, after going through this and sort of listening about web mentions and stuff, I got to tell you, I'm feeling a bit inspired to rip my custom, my map domain from WordPress.com, go back into actually paying for hosting for it for a year, and maybe tinker with and install all these different indie web type plugins and see what I can create for myself, and just sort of use the networking abilities that these social networks provide, and then put everything under one roof. You may have inspired me, David. We'll see.
Yeah, well, I will give you one more website to try if you do that. Okay. Go and look at Bridgy, B-R-D-G-Y. If you sign up for that, it will, and log into it with your Twitter account, it will send web mentions to your website every time somebody replies to you on Twitter. Since Twitter doesn't support web mentions, Bridgy supports it for it. It also
That's pretty cool.
It does it for GitHub as well, and it does it for Flickr. It did do it for Facebook until, again, the API got shut down. So it'll link to any service that somebody has written the code for, and it will just send web mentions if that service won't support it themselves.
Man, look at the numbers on it for Bridgy. About 5,100 accounts, 14.5 million responses handled, 3 million links analyzed, 1.3 million web mentions sent, 57,000 posts published, 48,000 blog posts processed. There's all kinds of things Bridgy's doing.
Yeah, and it's provided for the person who runs it. It doesn't cost that much money because all it does is act as a bridge. So
hence the name.
Yeah, simple name, simple word. But he pays for the hosting out of his own pocket. It doesn't. If it started costing him money, we'd probably all chip in. But it's small enough that he does it as a service to the community.
Wow, that's pretty cool. So before we wrap it up here, you know, you're speaking of community. I'd like you to talk a little bit more about the indie web community, how people can find out more information, get involved, and any last words you have about the indie web movement.
Well, one, I mentioned we have a chat room. So the party goes on when we're not having an actual in-person event almost continuously. And there is a running joke, which I will admit right now because I've already admitted it on recordings before, that I have a running alert on my phone that my phone will make a beeping noise when it isn't muted if somebody says WordPress in an indie web chat room. So regrettably, there are people in the community who have tested that. Now I've told another few large group of people that they can just go in there, say WordPress, and my phone will beep. So I will show up whenever I can. There's always somebody there. We have a European group. We have an American group, so that covers a large percentage of the day. We're growing into different areas, but that's our largest demographic group. We have events. Our annual event is in Portland every year. The next one is next June. And we have events coming up in Europe, Oxford, in England. Brighton in England is coming up. We'll probably have Berlin sometime in November again. And we're working for some time in September, likely New York City, where I'm from. So I'm likely to be there for that one. So if you want to come to our physical events, the list of events are on the site. That's indieweb.org. Our events are usually for a nominal fee, and that's usually just so we can buy some food. So I think our last event was $10. So you just give us a little money. We brought in pizza. Everybody was happy. And the events are 2 days where one day we do discussion. The second day we help. If you are new, we'll help you build a website. If you just want to bang on something, we'll all sit in a room together and try to build something.
And how can people access that chat room?
The easiest way is chat.indieweb.org. But on that page, if you look through, it'll actually tell you how you could connect over Slack. We have a bridge to Slack. You can connect over IRC through Freenode. And there's also a Matrix and a Discord integration, if I remember correctly.
Old school IRC.
Well, we bridge everything. Yeah. That is not a community principle. However, it is a reality that we make sure that everything works together because we don't want to cut ourselves off from anything that we're interested in. So
yeah. And if the philosophies of the indie web tie in great with some of the purposes and missions of the open web, and the two can intertwine and work together really well. And it seems to be that as what usually happens is we have corporate behemoths with seems like infinite pits of money with their walled off gardens and their silos. And the fact is that it appears that we have the tools available to show that we do not need to depend on these walled gardens and silos, that we can actually just, we could use some of the benefits they offer and networking power, but we can actually host and own and do pretty much everything on our own. We just need the people to realize that, invest the time to set their sites up in such a way where they can do that, and you know, which will lead to more contributions to this area. But we sure as hell could put up a good fight against a corporate behemoth.
Well, the one thing I will say, because I know people are worried about it, is do not think because there are a bunch of protocols and other things that we've implemented that you need to know all about that to join up. Or you need to get that stuff done. Just putting up a website is fine. And again, adding things over time. So everybody's website is in a constant state of being expanded. And the whole community is amused when somebody goes and does something interesting. For example, the person who made it snow on their site every time it was snowing where they were. That wasn't me. And there's one individual who has it, a picture on their site where if you view it on a cell phone, if you rotate your phone, the picture follows you around. So people do all sorts of little fun things, as well as the broader stuff of, okay, yeah, we need to develop some tools, but we also want to develop the community part of it, which is creating content, publishing stuff. And that does not require any large amount of technical knowledge, and nobody should be afraid to join up just because they see not being a programmer or not being a designer as a barrier.
And I know that Sarah Gooding has taken an interest in the Indie Web, and I know she was working on, or at least planning on, publishing a list of Indie Web tools on the site. So hopefully she can get that wrapped up pretty soon. But David, I want to thank you very much for coming on the show. This is sort of an entryway into the world of Indie Web, what it is. And maybe we'll have you back on in a few months to let us know what's going on with various other projects, what you're working on with your plugins, and you know, maybe you could be the Indie Web correspondent for WordPress Weekly.
I am always happy to show up and ramble on about something I'm passionate about.
And it's awesome.
The hard part is stopping me.
Me too.
All right, David. So how can people get in touch with you, or if they have any questions about the Indie Web?
Well, the easiest way is to come to the chat.
I'm okay.
I do have an email. Like,
go to the chat and type WordPress, and then you got his attention.
Or just go to the Indie on Freenode. It's the IndieWeb-WordPress room. Again, join the IndieWeb Slack, and you'll get into the same room. It's all bridged. So even go to chat.indieweb.org and click on the WordPress tab and just type something in there, and you don't even need any sort of client. It's web-based. So it's very easy to get a hold of me or anybody else in the community who's willing to help.
Excellent. So again, thanks again for being on the show, giving us some insight to the Indie Web, and enjoy the rest of your afternoon.
Okay, well, have a nice day.
You too, see ya.
And there you have it, folks. David Shansky giving us the 411 on the Indie Web. John, anything you want to talk about before we wrap up the show? I mean, if there is one thing, maybe you can... You know, I always like to talk about your tweets. You always, then you tweet something that's like worthy of talking about. talk about the tweet about your code is poetry, or you write a lot of code, and that's the way you, like 2/3 of what you write every day is code.
Yeah. So it reminded me, I was thinking about so there was a buddy press release that happened. It was just a bug fix and a security release. And
which happened yesterday.
Just happened yesterday, and I haven't had a lot of time to do much with BuddyPress, and so Boone has largely been doing a lot of it, but he hasn't had much time either. And so iMath was kind enough to handle the security release, and so Boone was really big into like tracking his time and spending working on clients, working on core, and thinking about the BuddyPress release, and everybody kind of got me reminiscing about using older pieces of software, like I forget what it was called. I know it's kind of baked into the macOS beta now, but like There was like a little thing that would listen to all of the apps you were in and words you would type and how much time you spent in every single app going around. And I always spent the majority of my time in a code editor, thinking about the BuddyPress release and everybody involved, and all of the things that I've been working on for the past few years now at Sandhills. Like, I don't really spend much time in Slack. I kind of have the same thing set up that David does with keywords. If something comes up with Sugar Calendar or BuddyPress or BBPress, those things will definitely notify me. And I'll usually try to post an emoji response or something with some eyeballs to show everyone that I'm around or paying attention, or if they need me, that I'm around and try and be helpful. But I've made similar analogies on the show before, but code really is and WordPress plugins and BuddyPress and BBPress and Sugar Calendar, like all these pieces of software, they are the only way that I currently sort of have to express myself or how I feel or what I'm working on or how I think about things. And so, 20 years ago, I used to spend a lot of time in Adobe Audition or Acid, Sonic Foundry or Sony Acid, or like I've downloaded GarageBand and Logic for my Mac, but I don't really do anything with music anymore. I do everything I do with code. And so, one of the WordPress mantras is, code is poetry. And I think that for me, at least for the past 10 years or so, like that has kind of been my outlet. That's been the only way that I have to express myself is with code, in code comments, or with building software for, other people to use and jump off of. So, it was a little melancholy kind of, but it was also just like an acknowledgement or really a realization that, that's the only way I have to express myself. The podcast here is one way, but it's an hour a week. It's not 40 hours. And that's what I think makes WordPress awesome and the open source community awesome and things like IndieWeb really great is like the collaboration part of it. Like when I worked at Automattic, I got to collaborate with some of the best WordPress developers around, and same thing at 10Up, and now at Sandhills, just like collaborating with really great, with people that are at the top of their game, just doing really cool things, it's the closest thing I have to like jamming with someone, like picking up a guitar or sitting down at a club and picking up an instrument and just kind of jamming with someone. Like code is the way that I do that now. And I don't know. That was kind of the beginning of that, or that's where that came from.
There's always much more to it than within the character limit you've expressed on Twitter. I just I always like diving deep. I'm like your therapist here. I'm doing a little bit of therapy. Twitter therapy.
A little bit.
For folks. So yeah,
the thing, like I guess I ended it before, like I hope that people enjoy it. And I think I'm not alone. I think there are probably a lot of people that spend a lot of time in front of their code editors, and I don't know if there are people out there listening that feel the same way or not. But let us know in the comments on the podcast or on Twitter or something. Cause there's a lot of us out there working on WordPress plugins that you don't always get a lot of feedback on. So hopefully it seemed like it resonated with some folks, but yeah, it's funny you brought it up, cause I kind of just put it out there and didn't really think much of it, but
yeah, no problem. Yeah. I'm always watching you, buddy. So Bob WP, he is a busy man, and he is starting up a new podcast called WP Digital Shop, and I happen to be the first guest on episode 1, and it's called WP Tavern Then and Now. If you go to wpdigitalshop.com, you can find a link to the episode. I might link to it in the show notes, but in the episode we talk about, it's about 41 minutes long. We discuss the kind of growth the tavern is experiencing its first year, one of the pivotal moments in the life of the tavern, whether I would have changed anything, whether the tavern is listened to by the casual WordPress user or have things evolved with the community. And about halfway into the show, I kind of open up and I share some things about Bob, about really sort of my personal feelings about know, how the tavern has evolved and how I have not, and how difficult the job has been on trying to adjust and evolve with the site. And I don't want to give everything away, and I have a feeling that maybe we'll dive deeper into this at a later date, but I don't think I've been shy on this show or any other show that, you know, writing for the tavern's been tough. The tavern has evolved from more of a user-centric, coming up with plugins and things that help end users get things done or solve problems, to more of a dev-centric type website where we get a lot more traffic and interest from people when Sarah writes about what GitHub's doing, or Jamstack, or Netlify, or Netlify, or whatever it is, or local dev environments, or JavaScript and frameworks. All that stuff is generating a lot more traffic, which to me is just one big snooze fest. And a lot more things are tied towards, or just dev oriented. And those are all things that are just boring to me. So and on top of that, the way we have to write things on the tavern with the whole journalistic and, you know, it's just something I've been struggling with. I'm still struggling with. And, you know, at some point I feel like I'm just going to have to make a choice to where, you know, do I want to continue to do this and struggle and try and find my way here, or just, you know, hang it up and be like Brett Favre, retire and not come back, you know, hopefully, and try something else new. But there's a lot of uncertainties that go with that, you know, with the job and the unemployment and, you know, what am I going to do? Can I get another remote worker position? You know, there's all that other stuff that I've talked about before. But so that's what I'm doing. Hopefully you go and listen to that episode. Bob's a cool cat, and I really enjoyed my conversation with him and what have you. So there's that. Other than that, John, anything else before we go wrap this puppy up?
I feel like there's like a ton of things that happened in the past week or two that. But I don't have them listed out anywhere. And I'm just going to sound silly trying to figure them out. So
well, you already mentioned if you folks are running BuddyPress, please update the latest version as soon as possible. Please. As it does, fix a couple security issues and,
around the new theme and groups. So if you're not using the latest and greatest theme, then you're probably okay. But if you are, then yeah, you probably want to upgrade. I don't know. I mean, there's like a lot of stuff I could talk about that's, you know, going on at Sandhills, but that just seems like seems a little selfish to take up the airtime.
This isn't Sandhills Weekly, John.
Exactly.
So with that said, I'm gonna wrap things up here.
Okay.
I had a great conversation about the indie web, and we go into the rest of summer. Woo! You can find show notes for this episode and all other episodes on WPTavern.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at Jeffro, JeffrZero, and John.
You can follow my blog, where I've started publishing a little bit more about some silly home automation things at jjj.blog, and follow me in some of my commits on, at least on Sugar Calendar recently, at github/jjj. And Twitter, I guess, but I'm with you. I want to pull all my content off and throw it in my website and be done with it.
Like I said, I'm a bit inspired to, you know, I haven't really had a need for, and it was just more like, well, you know, it's convenient for me to just have everything on .com, plus I'm saving some money. But now, you know, maybe I'll pull everything off and I'll get into this. And now it gives me a reason to tinker and finally learn some new things. And who knows, might get me remotivated into some things.
Hopefully, right? I was going to bring up the who wrote the Gutenberg in comments. I think, did Sarah just post about that on the tavern?
Yes.
Who did that? I wanted to talk about that, but I forgot. Now that we've already ended the show poorly.
Yes.
I was going to look it up now.
Yes, we have already ended the show poorly, but no. It is Tom Noel.
Thank you. This is the coolest thing that I think I've seen this week. And this is the after show. Sarah wrote up a post on the tavern. New experimental plugin brings the block editor to WordPress comments. So this
Which is
like
something
a huge
we thought would be
deal.
Inevitable at some point.
Yeah, it is inevitable. And he did a really good job with it. Like, I thought he made it look as good as anyone could consider it. He broke Gutenberg down, has just the editor, just blocks, no inspector, no sidebar, no anything. It looks really great. It's pretty slick to use. It just pulls itself into the comment flow. And I would love to try and pull something like that in for BB Press or something. Like, that's one of those things where I talked to Tammy Lister at WordCamp Europe, and she says something about trying to put Gutenberg in Buddy Press and have block support for things. And I like just don't, I have a hard time imagining that. But watching Tom put this together, this is pretty good. And I wanted to talk about it on the show so our listeners would be sure to go check it out. It is available on GitHub, and quite a few comments on this post about it too. So,
and Justin Taylor commented on it. He says it's a cool experiment. He says he sees it as something fun, but not anything I'd ever consider for inclusion on any site due to performance, much less in core. It's good that devs are experimenting with the block editor outside of post content, though, to help provide ideas for the future.
Yep, and I agree with Justin. Performance is a big problem with including front-end stuff like this on every page of your website. But, you know, there's a sliding scale. Eventually, computers catch up, browsers catch up, you cache all that stuff. It's not a big deal.
I don't know.
Move on, so.
I'm running a pretty good piece of hardware on this desktop machine, and Facebook makes it want to.
I know.
It makes my machine cry. And all I want to do is post a status update. And the computer's like, no, stop, get away.
Especially new Twitter, right? And then Sarah posted about WP GraphQL for advanced custom fields is now available for free. So anytime on the show that I have an opportunity to promote GraphQL and the WP GraphQL project, I want to. So shout out to Jason Ball, who is just giving away one of their cooler things, GraphQL for advanced custom fields, is now a free plugin. It was $50, $49 a year, and now it's free. So if you're using ACF, go check this out. And if you don't know anything about GraphQL and you do use ACF, this is like your opportunity to get into GraphQL and be amazed at how much better it is than doing a bunch of RESTful kind of things.
And Jeff Chandler wrote about, wait, I'm checking.
Who's that guy?
Jeff Chandler didn't write anything. Yeah, that's a problem. All right. So we're finished with the after show. Everybody enjoy the rest of your week. We'll talk to you again soon. Okay, bye.